Hi, I'm Orbert Davis, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic Jazz Cast Series, where we sit down with music legends as well as rising stars to hear their stories. This monthly series is all about sharing experience and knowledge with you. Thanks for tuning in. For more, visit chicagojazzphilharmonic.org. Let's do it. I am so excited. I think there's a time in every teacher's life when they become like a fan, a serious fan of one of their students. This is my moment. I'd like to introduce you to Franklin Vanderbilt. And before we talk, Franklin, I got a couple of videos that I picked I want to play so that our students can get to know you before we talk. Okay. Here's Franklin Vanderbilt. All right, we're live, man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, I'd like to introduce you to one of my favorite musicians in the entire world, and he has been around the world, Franklin Vanderbilt. Franklin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing really great, and it's your fault that I'm doing great.
You know? You always say that. I'm trying to think, man, what did I do? I don't know what I did.
Well, to everyone that's watching, first of all, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Nice to meet you. When I was in high school, Orbert Davis was one of my mentors and one of my teachers. I was a part of a program called the Jazz Mentors Program at Ravinia Park. It's outside of Chicago, Illinois, and he changed my life. But he gave me more drive to continue to do music. And, you know, he's one of the major individuals, in addition to Ernie Adams, in addition to Carl Bud Annis from Church High School,
yeah,
God rest his soul, those three guys changed my life, and, wow, and they encouraged me to continue.
So tell us about the high school Franklin Vanderbilt. what was life like for you as a young student musician?
Fun. I really enjoyed going to school, you know. I was also a RTC kid, so I had to report to school at 5:45 a.m., so I already had a lot to do.
So what is ROTC?
Reserve Officer Training Corps. I had the option to go to the Marines or the Army directly after high school, but no, it was music that took over my life, because by the time I was 15, I knew I wanted to do this for a living. I was sure.
Wow.
You know, thanks to you.
Oh, man. Okay, that's enough of that. But anyway, no, you worked hard, man. I mean, you worked hard. So tell us about after high school. How did your life progress then?
Okay.
Well, first of all, we have to say that you went to high school in Chicago, to Schurz High School?
Yeah. I went to Carl Schurz High School. Eastern Illinois University was the college.
Okay.
Carl Schurz High School was like some of the best moments in my life. I had a lot of fun. I had too much to do. You know,
wow.
It was a very multicultural school, and I really enjoyed experiencing, you know, all the different types of people and personalities and cultures. So that alone, you know, it attracted me to my school at the time.
Wow. That's cool.
And Eastern Illinois University is the college I attended.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, man, so how does one make it from Chicago to, you live in LA now, right?
Yeah.
How does one do that? And again, by the video, we know that you're not just sitting around, man.
Well, life after high school, is that the question?
Yeah, like from Chicago to LA.
Well, after college, I started playing with this blues rock band called Ron Prince and Hard Time. And it was my first experience traveling around, you know, the U.S.
Mm.
One thing led to another. You know, I met this person that wanted me to do work out of town. You know, like along the way, I just created new relationships, and my drumming got better. And I circulated around the city, different jazz clubs. Before you know it, I moved out of Chicago.
Wow.
I moved out in 1999, wow. And I lived in Vegas for 3 years. I moved to Las Vegas. So from going to blues, jazz, to rock, and all the people I met, you know, they just started calling me to other states, and I just ended up staying.
You know? Wow, wow. So in Vegas, I'm sure you did a lot of shows and whatnot, right?
Yeah, a lot of shows, a lot of lounges.
Wow.
A lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I'm not a gambler.
Good. So in these formative years, I bet there's a lot of things that you learned that's so important for our students to know. Things like being on time. We think about that as being like a small thing. So talk about some of those things that you had to learn from being a student to now being a professional.
First of all, thank God for my father, because he instilled in me early on to always be on time. And I'm definitely a timely person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a strong believer that your first impression is like your most important impression. So, you know, if you show up to a job late, that's not going to look good. It never looks good. I don't care what you, who you're doing it with. I was always on time. I would love to share a short story with you.
Please.
That I was late.
Oh, man, please.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if my fellow Chicagoans are familiar with Irwin Helfer in Chicago.
The name is familiar.
He's a blues boogie-woogie pianist.
Right.
So Irwin Helfer, the guy in black. So he hired me. And it was one of the best jobs I ever had in Chicago as a developing musician, as a professional musician.
Mm-hmm.
So we had our performances every Friday at Andy's Jazz Club, if you guys are familiar with that place.
Mm-hmm.
One night I was outside talking to my girlfriend, and I was late coming to the stage.
Oh,
5 minutes late coming to the stage.
Okay.
To make a long story short, he deducted $60, I believe, out of my pay.
Wow.
And he paid me very well. I believe I made $200, $250 every Friday at that time, which is pretty good pay for a 19-year-old, you know, playing music, doing something you love. So he took money out of my pay, and that one thing alone made me learn very fast.
Yeah.
Be on time.
So that was probably the last time. The last time you were late. The
last time I was ever late.
First and last.
Really, it was the first and last
time. That hurts.
You know, so my philosophy is, you know, to be early is to be on time. To be on time is to be late.
Mm.
People don't pay you for excuses. People pay you for a result.
There you go. Nice. I love it.
It's very simple in all types of business.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's awesome too. But I imagine, first thing is that looking at that picture, you were the youngest person in the band.
Yeah, I was 19 on that picture.
So what is the adjustment like from being a student to all of a sudden being in a professional world?
The adjustment? Well, I enjoyed being a student because the more I kept my ears and eyes open, the more tools I gained and the more vocabulary I gained and the more moves I was able to make. The transition from a student to professionalism, it wasn't difficult and it wasn't a very large contrast, I would say, because I found myself at an early age presenting myself in a professional manner as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're a student or a professional, you still have to deliver. You have a responsibility as a student. You have a responsibility as a professional.
Right. So
you have to deliver for both positions in life. So the transition was quite smooth, I would say, and enjoyable.
Right.
You know, sure. I still have to look and listen as a professional.
Right.
The difference is that they pay me to do it well.
Wow. So moving to the present, I mean, looking at that second video, so you now perform regularly with, explain your current situation.
Well, first of all, to back up a bit,
okay.
Prior to my current situation, or my current association, I would say, I worked with quite a few names. I worked with a shadow jazz, acid jazz jam band. From Chicago. If anyone has ever heard of Liquid Soul.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I worked for them for quite some time. That was fun. And after that, I worked with Chaka Khan.
Oh, I'm melting.
Stanley Clark.
Oh, man. Come on now. Really?
Yeah. And to tell more names, I guess, Stevie Wonder. And after... Oh, I also worked with a guy named Richie Kotzen. He was the former guitarist of Poison, if anyone remember that rock band.
Mm-hmm.
After that time in my life, which was roughly 2006, 2007, I met a guy by the name of Lenny Kravitz. And after speaking on the phone, I flew to New York to meet him. We jammed and played, and little did I realize that one moment will take 13 years.
Wow.
Of my life.
You know? Wow, man.
It's been the most amazing 13 years of my life, and very honored for it.
That's incredible. Well, the clip we saw, I mean, that was a HBO special and
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man.
Yeah.
How do you get used to all the lights and the glitter and the glamour and the screaming and the everything?
Just smile, Orvis. Smile.
Oh, man. I like that.
You know, it was pretty easy to get used to because I started drumming at an early age in church. So I was used to performing for people.
Mm-hmm. You
know, so it was all a part of it for me. So I kind of grew up in that. And thanks to you, you put me on my first professional stage, Ravinia.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So
wow.
I've always enjoyed the lights. It's a wonderful experience.
Well, I could imagine that it doesn't feel like you're going to work, does it?
Not really.
Yeah.
But I respect it as my work for sure.
Of course.
It doesn't feel like I'm working.
Yeah. Well, I always say that's why we say we play music. We don't say we work music. We play. And play has got to be fun. It's supposed to be fun.
Yes.
Wow. Absolutely. Wow. But I do want to talk about something else that I just learned recently when I followed you. And I was watching TV and I saw a news report about a special project that you're planning to do in Chicago.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Happening now, even in the middle of all of this unfortunate coronavirus stuff. In 2017, I started to pursue my former grade school building, and it's going quite well. In case, you know, some people don't know, that's listening from other places, other countries, or other states. If some people are not aware of this, in 2011, there were 52 public schools that were closed.
Right.
And unfortunately, my grade school was one of them. So I've been doing a lot of lead work along with my great team in Chicago of acquiring my former grade school building.
What school was it?
Goldblatt.
Goldblatt.
On the west side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, things are going quite well. I'm very thankful for that. I had to give something back to the place I come from.
You're talking about a building. So
yes.
So building. You want the building, but what are you going to do with the building?
Well, I'm starting a school.
Okay.
Starting a performance arts and economic center on the west side of Chicago. Yes.
That is awesome.
It will definitely be a curriculum of reading, writing, and math, but we will specialize in performance arts and economics.
Wow.
Yeah. So you'll be hearing a lot of news very soon.
That's cool. And I like the fact that you're combining those three things, because one, we got to read. The information comes from reading but then performing arts. But then this aspect of business is so important. And I think you model that extremely well. I appreciate that.
Exactly. You know, I have learned throughout my life so far that poverty, it's definitely something that we can get out of and prevent. And all it takes is information, like you just said.
Yeah.
Reading and discovering, not only discovering yourself, but discovering all the information that is available to you.
Wow.
Whether you're black or white or whatever color, it doesn't matter what color you are. You know, the information is out there to help you to advance in whatever you decide to do.
Wow. Hey, let's go down that path just a little bit. When you're talking about no matter what color one is, I imagine that the world that you exist, particularly in the performance realm, working with Lenny Kravitz, Chaka Khan, cross genre, because I knew you as a jazz drummer, and you said earlier you play gospel. And I mean, I have to say this about Chaka Khan, because when you said her name, I melt every, oh, there I go again. Whenever I hear that name. So no one knows that Chaka Khan was a jazz singer, you know? And so in her set, did she just, because she did an album with Freddie Hubbard and Chick Corea and Lenny White. Mm-hmm. And did you get a chance to like really talk about those experiences with her?
I actually had a chance to play that album.
Oh.
During that time, short story, but during that time, Chaka Khan had two bands. She had her, you know, her R&B band with all the hits, you know, The Fire, Ain't Nobody.
Oh, man.
For 2 years, I was a part of that band.
Yeah.
And then she had another band, which was like the straight ahead jazz band. You know, sometimes she would go out and do her dates on that exact record that you're speaking of.
Yeah, man.
And if you happen to know who Benny Calhuda is, that was the drummer she always used for those gigs.
Yeah.
One day he couldn't make it.
I love when that happens. Wow, that had to have been special.
I had the honor of playing that book, and it was definitely incredible. I want to say, a little bit intimidating, because it was a point in my life that I had to adjust, like switch hats, you know, again, to play with, you know, some mentors I've always wanted to play with. So
sure. Oh, that's incredible.
Respect for it. I had a lot of respect for the opportunity. But yeah, it was great. It was really good.
That's awesome. So what I was going to say was, in you living in this world where they're playing all these different genres, and even looking at Lenny Kravitz, a lot of people would put him in the category of rock, you know, even though the music is in incredibly funky. So you live in a world where you get to meet and play with and the audience of people of every color.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about those experiences.
I love people, you know, even in high school. Again, see, this goes back to my high school days. Mm-hmm. I went to a high school that had quite a few different cultures, you know, and I enjoyed commingling with everyone, getting to know everybody's styles and what they like to eat. And it was just awesome. So Subconsciously, I was already prepared to travel.
Sure.
So these times were very educating and very eye-opening. I made a lot of great friends around the world. And you get to experience how other people live.
Yeah.
And of course, the languages, obviously, but it's been the best teacher and the best school of my life, my traveling to this day.
Wow, that's incredible. That leads to a question that we have a couple of drummers, of course. They're the first ones to ask questions. Thank you so much. So Chris asked, awesome. What songs were your favorite with Stevie Wonder?
Ass.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one and Sir Duke were my most favorites to play.
Yeah. That's so cool, man. I envy you. I played with Stevie one time in Chicago, and that was the end of my freelancing career, because I didn't want to play with anybody else after that. I said, if I can't play my own stuff, I don't want to play with anybody else. I just want to leave that.
You know? Yeah. I understand that.
Wow.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Very well.
Yeah. Stevie.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we're going to have lots of conversations. But then Donovan Davis asked, what types of rudiments do you practice?
These days,
mm-hmm.
I practice guitar chords.
Oh, man. Okay, so tell us why. Tell us why.
Well, I'm a singer and songwriter as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I also have my own project. It's a rock, folk rock project I have. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And to answer your question, sir, what type of rudiments? You know, my favorite rudiment, even in high school, and to this day, my favorite rudiment was the triple rattlesnake and inverted paradiddles. You'd be surprised how many things you can get out of an inverted paradiddle.
Okay, so, show us. Show us.
Rudiment. Well, I don't have my drums with me right now.
Can you do it? Like, there you go.
So like that's a paradiddle.
Okay.
You know, if you take a rudiment and just split it up on a drum set and even invert it, switch the stickings around, you'll be surprised what you get. Wow. There's a book called Stick Control that you should check out. And it's going to give you many variations of sticking.
Wow.
And you'll be surprised how the simplest thing will develop your technique into the most biggest vocabulary you can imagine.
Good. We'll put that in the chat. Stick control for drummers. I'm going to get it too. Because, man, drumming is my way of staying awake when I'm driving and sleepy.
Okay.
my mastered instrument, other than the trumpet, is the egg.
Nice.
When I'm driving, man, I just put on some guaco or some Cuban music, and that'll keep me awake for hours.
Let me guess. Was it Ernie Adams?
Oh, man.
That gave you that egg?
Hey, I'm the only person, because Ernie still plays in my band, and he plays in the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic.
Of course.
I am the only person that he will allow to play an egg next to him. You know, cause sometimes horn players pick up a percussionist and be like, no, man, that's okay. You ain't got it. That's okay. I got it.
Yeah.
All right. We got a question from Jordan Warren, a saxophonist. He asks, what percentage do you believe of musicians, singers, performers will actually make it to the point where they can make it their livelihood?
That's a very good question.
Wow.
What percentage?
Well, he's got another part. He's got another part of the question. Maybe that'll help. He says, can anyone with the work ethic or the talent make it, or is it just a select, very talented few?
Another very good question.
What's this guy? I'm glad you're answering it, not me.
I'm going to answer. I didn't say I couldn't answer it.
Okay.
I like the questions. It's good. Let me answer the first question first. Mm-hmm. What percentage do you think would make it? Well, after you apply your dedication and your persistence to what you believe in and what you work on or what you are, when you apply 100% dedication to anything, you will move further. You will advance. However, there is a part of the music business that's called business. Yeah. And there's also a part of show business that's called show. Now, you got show and you got business. You can practice as much as you want, and you can be the best saxophone player in the world or the best drummer in the world. But if you don't have good business, and to a point, if you don't have enough showmanship, that determines how much of a percentage makes it and does not make it. Because when you're very good at what you do, you still have to handle business and you still have to be fun to look at.
Oh, wow. That makes sense. Yes.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. That's why it's called the music business, show business. You got great musicians, but you got some musicians that's not good in show business. It's two completely different things.
Yeah.
You got people that are outstanding in show business, but then you got zero music capability. It's two different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those two factors alone determines who makes it, what percentage makes it and what percentage does not make it.
Yeah, I like the fact you said 100% because, you know, we really don't have to worry about anybody else but what we do. We have to give it our 100%.
Right.
That makes sense.
Exactly. You give yourself 100%. Mm-hmm. And success is measured in different ways. Success is not always about money.
Wow. Tell me about it. So Morgan Chapman, another drummer in a camp, says...
I didn't answer another question, actually.
Oh, go ahead. You got it. Go ahead.
The other question was... What was the other question?
Can anyone with the work ethic or talent make it, or is it just a select, very talented few?
Oh, I just answered your question.
Yeah.
No business. It depends.
Yeah.
You should always have great work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, but when you learn how to master all those avenues, those mm-hmm. are the ones that make it, because it's about business and entertainment and relationships and kindness.
Yeah. One of the things I told the students before, and I tend to say this throughout the camp, is to look around, because somebody in this room, in our virtual room, will be with you all your life, and your path may cross, or you may work with them, or you may work for them.
Right.
So never burn a bridge.
Never. I learned that at a very young age.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you burn a bridge, or did somebody burn it with you?
Put it this way. I knew the correct bridge to burn.
Oh.
Most cases, you never burn bridges. Never.
Right. Oh, man.
If I was to say I burned one bridge in my life, it was one. But I was very young, and it was a long time ago, and that organization deserved it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, well.
Sometimes bridges burn themselves.
We'll talk a little later. Okay. But, okay. Check out Chris Johnson, the drummer, says, I'm trying the inverted paradiddle. It's like a workout. My arms and wrists hurt.
Good. That means you're doing it right. Keep going.
All right. So, man, this is just a treat. I'm so incredibly thrilled to reconnect with you.
It was very mutual, sir.
What about recordings, though? Like, have you done? I saw something on because I follow you on Facebook, and you had done you were part of a percussion section in a movie score.
No, you're getting me mixed up with Donald Barry.
Oh, I could have swore I saw you with. Oh, yeah, I think you're right. With Letty Garcia, was it? No. Okay. Another student from the past.
We kind of look similar.
And I had you both as students at the same time. Yeah. But as far as recording, yeah. I had a program at Columbia College on Monday nights, and Roosevelt Griffin was in that, and Maurice Brown, a lot of musicians now who are out on the scene.
Wow, I know Maurice.
And Corey Wilkes, yeah. Too, played trumpet.
I know Corey. I used to be in a band with those guys.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Small world.
Yep.
But as far as recordings, and I know Los Angeles is a difficult scene in terms of getting into recordings and whatnot, but have you played records and CDs?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm in the studio now. I'm actually in a band with the guitarist from The Doors. If you ever heard of The Doors?
Oh, yeah.
His name is Rob Krieger. We're making an album right now. So, as a matter of fact, I'm going in today to complete more songs.
Awesome.
As far as the recording scene in California, mm-hmm. You mean? Well, yeah. I remember the days when I came around. I moved to Los Angeles in 2003, and there was more sessions available back then.
Right.
I got calls, you know, every now and then, but I was always touring too. So it's two different lanes. You can stay around and try to work yourself in the small circle of recording guys, or you go out and tour. I was able to split the difference.
That's cool.
I enjoy recording. And I've done a fair amount of recordings here. I recorded three albums with Richie Kotzen, guitarist. Check that out.
Okay.
I also have my own music on iTunes under my name. Check that out.
Definitely.
I've done quite a few sessions with quite a few different independent artists, and I've worked for name producers.
Yeah.
Desmond Child. I've worked for several people throughout the years.
That's cool. But nothing beats your own project. So tell us a bit about this project. You said folk tunes on guitar, and you're the songwriter. And
well, it's a rock project, rock and roll, but it also has elements of folk rock.
Okay.
As well.
What's the difference? What's the difference then?
Folk rock is very acoustic guitar driven. You know?
Yeah.
And rock, hard rock, is more electric guitar driven, and you know, it depends on the lyrics and the grooves and things. But I have a project that I've been working on for years. I've been writing songs since 2003, actually.
Nice.
And I started writing a group of songs, not realizing that I was really writing for myself.
Oh, nice. Good.
I started singing these songs, and they became a lot comfortable to the point where now I'm singing backing vocals on the drums with Lenny Kravitz.
Nice.
I started to release my own music back in 2012, and I'm introducing more music this year.
That's really awesome, man. Well, we'll keep our eyes out. Man, this has been, I could talk another hour with you, and I will do that personally. So find some time. We got to chat, man. And when things open up and you get back to Chicago, or if I get to LA, let's hook up.
That concludes this episode of the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic Jazz Cast Series. We really appreciate you tuning in. Sharing these stories wouldn't be possible without the support of listeners like you. To hear previous episodes, or to make a donation, or to simply learn more about our mission, please visit us at chicagojazzphilharmonic.org. See you next time on the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic Conversation Series.